Stay up late with Lanita Duke and Grassroot News on Wednesday, June 22nd from 10 p.m. until midnight as we celebrate the music of Roberta Flack as well as agitating for social change. Remember, stay up late with me Wednesday, June 22nd, 10 p.m. until midnight on KBOO.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. My name is Emma Lugo and I am one of the co-hosts of this program. And we're here to talk about prisons, the prison industrial complex, and about justice. And justice especially from the perspective of people who are incarcerated. Today we are here with Tyler from the Anarchist Black Cross, and we're going to be talking about the Texas prison strike. We're also going to be talking about the September 9th national call for a national prison strike and talking about the work of the Anarchist Black Cross in prison justice and prison solidarity. So welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you. So, Tyler, let's start by talking about the Texas prison strike right away. That just happened in April. What happened with that?
So that strike lasted about 22 days, and what happened was 22 or seven prisons across Texas came together and basically self-organized and approached IWOC nationally and was like, hey, we've decided to go on strike throughout Texas, and they put out a zine announcing the strike. And so yeah, it lasted about 22 days, and seven facilities were shut down for about 22 days. Yeah.
So what were some of the issues that the prisoners were striking about?
Folks were striking about the fact that in Texas right now, prisoners, the minimum wage for prisoners is actually $0.00.
Oh my
so
goodness.
Yeah, that's a big issue there. So folks are basically forced to go out and work, which pretty much fits the definition of slavery. And so that was one of the central things in their announcement, was the fact that in the Constitution, with the amendments that ended slavery, basically there's an exemption for prisoners, or, you know, people can still be coerced to work as long as it's in a form of punishment. So that was a central demand. Of course, there's living conditions, over housing, poor, you know, food. And another big one was the fact that all prisoners down in Texas are forced to pay $100 copay for any medical, you know, procedures or treatments that they're going to be receiving, which is a huge expense for prisoners who are paid $0 mm-hmm. an hour to work. So, there's a lot of, you know, medical mistreatment happening there. And that was another big driver.
Who ends up paying for their medical copays, or do they just not get medical care?
I think that is a really good question. For a lot of them, they probably just don't get health care. You know, for instance, one of the big incidents that drove a 2008 prison riot in Texas, with a prison ran by the GEO Group, a prisoner there named Jesus Manuel Galindo died because he was suffering from epilepsy and was not getting the medical attention that he needed. And that actually drove one of the first rebellions in 2008 that kind of led to the continual series of, you know, struggle down there in the Texas prison system. So yeah, people often, you know, pass away due to medical neglect and not being able to pay those fees. And a lot of times prisoners have to turn to family, you know, raising money and sending them money so that they can get that basic stuff, so that they can get basic hygiene things from the commissary, so that they can spend money on phone calls. You know, in Oregon, that's one huge issue. It's about $5 for one phone call. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of money for somebody that's, you know, again, making nothing to pennies on an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Texas is really bad. I'm guessing that a lot of these prisoners are people of color, too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were these, was this at men's prisons, at women's prisons? Do you know?
Yeah, in Texas, they were all in men's prisons. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, women's prisons have their whole own set of issues and struggles that happen there as well that, we could, you know, it's a whole nother topic mm-hmm. to get into.
And were these federal prisons or state prisons?
Most of them were state prisons as far as I know. And so what happened in April is basically a lot of the prisons, they went in and did preemptive shutdowns because they knew people were going to be striking. And so the prison guards came in and just shut down everything beforehand. But people continued to refuse to go back out for 22 days. And so it resulted in quite a loss of, you know, financial resources for the institution, because they rely on prisoner labor themselves to actually run most of these facilities, to do the cooking, the cleaning, you know, all the basic maintenance tasks. So once the prisoners stop doing that, it falls on the guards. And mm-hmm. So
the prisoners do most of the work to like run the prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like so evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, I remember the first time that I went to San Quentin, and I learned that San Quentin was actually built by the prisoners. That was the first thing they did, was they built the prison.
Yeah.
In 1868. It's like one of the oldest prisons in this country.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And it's also where all of California's death row prisoners are.
Right, right.
Were any of the strikes at the Galveston prison, that's where most of the death row prisoners in Texas are?
In Texas, Galvin prison, Galveston, that rings a bell. Mm-hmm. It could be. I can't remember the exact names of each facility, but
yeah. And it was a hot April in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really wet, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't imagine, like, being stuck in a prison in Texas and having to, like, suffer under these unendurable conditions of heat and humidity and not getting paid, you know, for your work.
Yeah.
That must just be unbearable.
There's a whole history of this. Let's see. What was the one? And, you know, just before April, there was a riot that happened in an immigrant detention facility down there before April, where prisoners were being forced to live in, like, essentially tent villages. And so there was just massive overcrowding, and these tents, you know, are just, you don't want to be living in a tent in the middle of the desert in Texas with the heat beating down on you. And so that place actually had a large riot there as well. Another place ran by the Geo Group, which is a private prison company.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So the
Texas,
that's Willey County Detention Center in January 2015 was where that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the ICE like border detention facilities are in Texas along the Rio Grande.
Yeah.
And I know we've had people on the show before who have gone down to Texas to work for 3 months in some of those facilities and try to, you know, do solidarity work and also come back with the stories. You know, one of the really interesting things is that G4S runs a lot of those security prisons, you know, where we keep, you know, economic refugees who have come to this country to work. And, It's really interesting because G4S is also one of the main security companies involved in occupied Palestine.
Yeah. in the city of Portland. They do a lot of security here.
And also in the Orlando mass murderer was a G4S security guard.
Yeah. See what kind of culture they're breeding in their company.
So, are any of the, when the Texas prison strike happened in April, it lasted for 22 days. And I'm wondering if any of the prisons were run by private prison companies. Or were they federal and state facilities?
So most of the private prisons are ran by Correction Corporations of America and the GEO Group. And most of those prisons are immigrant detention facilities. There's a few in the country that aren't, but that's mainly where the private prisons that's their area. So most of the ones in April were actually state-ran facilities.
Which aren't any better.
Aren't any better, no. But yeah, just last year there was actually waves of hunger strikes happening in the GEO facility up in Tacoma. There was about 1,200 immigrant detainees there that went on hunger strike protesting the terrible conditions there. And then that inspired a wave of hunger strikes that then hit the Gulf, and people were going on hunger strike down in some of the GEO Group detention facilities in Texas as well.
So sometimes people who are incarcerated on the inside have ways of communicating with each other.
So. Radio is a great way because people in prison can hear on the radio. You know, some of the prisoners I talk to, they talk about, you know, make sure to get the word out about this or that thing on community radio because or Pacifica, this or that, because we listen to that on the inside. So,
yeah, shout out to anyone who's listening in a correctional facility in the state of Oregon. Thank you so much. And we are on your side.
Absolutely.
So the work that's going on with the Anarchist Black Cross, let's talk about that for a couple of minutes, and then we'll come back to talking about the prison strike. What is the Anarchist Black Cross?
So the Anarchist Black Cross is an organization broadly that's basically been around since the days of the Russian Revolution, and it started as the Anarchist Red Cross, but we had to change our name because there's a terrible nonprofit called the American Red Cross. So basically, the Anarchist Black Cross was originated to, you know, help out anarchist revolutionaries during the Russian Revolution, and continued on since there. Had a resurgence to protect, to support, you know, people fleeing Franco's Spain and working with political prisoners down there. And so that's had, that had another big wave in the 60s of, you know, ABCs coming together, and you know, in North America, we have a network of Anarchist Black Cross chapters throughout the country. There's probably 20 of us, and we meet, you know, every year and get together and work together. There's chapters, you know, still all over the world that kind of work autonomously, but we come together and work on some larger campaigns like the September strike. Locally, in Portland, one of our big things has been working with prisoners and building connections throughout the state, and just building relationships and getting to know folks that are fighting on the inside for their freedom. And so we help them. We work in solidarity with them to run a newsletter written by prisoners throughout the state of Oregon from different facilities. And so we have our second issue of that coming out, and it's totally written all by prisoners, the Oregon Prison Forum. We run a zine catalog that we distribute with radical literature throughout the state. And yeah, we do, we're in connection with, you know, wider West Coast grouping of, IWOC chapters as well, Incarcerated Worker Organizing Committee, which is a committee within the Industrial Workers of the World Union. Maybe you've heard of the Burgerville Union that's blowing up right now. It's a IWW.
No, what is that?
It's a IWW project right now where they are working with workers at Burgerville to organize or help them self-organize and, you know, fight for their rights as workers to get paid a fair wage. And so
are workers at Burgerville able to be unionized or to, you know, organize?
I think that Burgerville doesn't like that they're doing that very much, and I know that they're latching on some repression campaigns to try to get the union out, but it seems like they're failing pretty big right now. So there's a Nash, there's a in the IWOC part aspect, the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee within IWW, there's about 750 to 1,000 members throughout the prison system right now. So that's a thing, and we work to send prisoners information about that and get them signed up throughout Oregon and up in Washington. And then another big thing I should note that we
before you right, go on, I want to talk about that for just a minute, because I know that there's definitely people listening on the inside.
Yeah.
And so if somebody who's on the inside wanted to get involved in the IWOC, what does that stand for again?
Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee.
Okay. How could they get involved in that from the inside?
They could write to us, the Portland ABC, Portland Prisoner Support, at what's our address? 14 0
I'll give you a minute.
701 Southeast Alder Street. Okay. So if they write there.
Say that again.
701 Southeast Alder Street, Portland, Oregon.
Okay. 701 Southeast Alder Street, Portland, Oregon, and they could look up the zip code.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see if we can get that zip code before the show's over. But that's one way. So they could write to you regular mail and ask about the IWOC, the intern.
Oh, sorry. That's 109 Southeast Alder Street, 97214.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's IWOC, and that stands for?
Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee.
And the address again?
109 Southeast Alder Street, 97214.
Great. Bam. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and if people on the inside wanted to get involved, what would they need to know? What can they do from the inside?
Well, you know, just shoot a letter to that address and let us know, you know, what's going on with you? What are some issues maybe on the inside that you're seeing going on? You know, let us know if you want our zine catalog, if you want some literature to get, join IWOC, we can send you, get you signed up with that. So just, you know, send us an introductory letter. Let us know kind of what's going on. If there's anything you see happening that you want to let us know, if there's any like civil rights violations you see going on, you can let us know about that.
What are some of the issues going on that you know about that are happening that go out in your newsletter?
Yeah, in Oregon, so like our latest newsletter talks a lot about like people on the inside are talking a lot about just the rehabilitation aspect of prisons and just kind of how it's disingenuous, I would say, if you lightly, you know, just the process is, they use a lot of these wordings of, oh, this is rehabilitation, we're working to rehabilitate you, but really it's another rubber stamp, you know, hey, you play by the rules and just do your time and we'll give you the stamp that you're rehabilitated and you can return to society, but we really don't give you any tools you need to like come out and, you know, build a life for yourself in this crumbling capitalist society that we live in, you know? So that's kind of a big issue that people talk about locally. There's, you know, we still have a problem of indefinite solitary confinement in Oregon.
Oh, really? Does that happen in Oregon?
It does happen. Mm-hmm. They're still able to do it. It's not, you know, outlawed in Oregon.
Can't remember what the name of it was. I volunteered out at Coffee Creek and they had the name for it. It was like a special name.
ICU. Sometimes.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The SHU,
The SHU.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Special housing units. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a big thing. And
what is that like for someone who's put into solitary confinement indefinitely? I mean, what does that do to a person?
It's a form of torture.
Yeah.
It's a form of torture. Humans are social animals. We're meant to be with other people. And, you never hear of a human being that grows up all by themselves, you know? So when you put a human into a cell for 23 hours a day, usually they put them in there for 23 hours a day. They let them out usually for 1 hour a day. Mm-hmm. And what they do is then they put you in like an isolated cage situation out in a yard by yourself, mm-hmm. and that's as much as you.
That's the 1 hour they go out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
they're totally isolated even when they're out.
Yeah, yeah, you're just totally isolated in basically a bathroom.
That would make me go insane.
Yeah, it's like imagine living in a bathroom.
Yeah,
you know, and people go insane. People lose all sense of themselves.
I would try to kill myself.
That happens all the time.
Yeah,
it happens all the time. You know, prisoners. That's a very popular way, reason why prisoners, you know, die, because, you know, if you're looking at the rest of your life as in a little box, mm-hmm. that's pretty bleak. So,
well, so far we've talked about prisoners getting paid no money for working, which is slavery. And we've talked about immigration prisons where people have to live in hot tents out in the desert under the baking sun. And we've talked about people being put in indefinite solitary confinement. It sounds like prisons are pretty useless.
Yeah, pretty useless. There's really no correlations either when you look at the statistics that more prisons do much to stop crime at mm-hmm. all. You know, and so really what it is a form of social control and profit making, you mm-hmm. know, and that's the origins of the prison system, which is a whole nother topic, but comes out of, you know, the French Revolution and during the Enlightenment era. And back in the day, it was all punishment was very physical. You know, you mess up, we're chopping your hands off. We're going to draw and quarter you. If you say something bad about the king, it was all these spectacles of terror. And what started to happen as the kings became more unpopular in Europe, they became sites of rebellion when they would try to punish people. And so people would liberate. There'd be massive riots where they, like, especially during the French Revolution, they start liberating, you know, these prisoners, these convicts or whatever, because they saw the ruling order as illegitimate. So the way that they started to rule changed to where, well, let's hide these people away. Let's hide the dangerous class, you know, these people that are not conforming to our social order. We have to, like, warehouse them and, like, hide them away. And then the United States, you have the whole legacy of, like, the racist slave system that then found, hey, look at these prisons. Let's just transform, you know, this captive labor market into this other convenience institution that's developing around this time. So it's really a form of, you know, class, social control and profit making and, you know, racist exploitation. And yeah, it's a terrible, useless institution that needs to be abolished immediately, as mm-hmm. well as the police.
mm-hmm. So, yeah, yeah, both at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta go.
So September 9th is the beginning of the national mm-hmm. Prison strike. So there's a call out, just for those who haven't heard, for a national prison strike. Now, what does that mean to have a national prison strike?
So the call out comes from a group of folks called the Free Alabama Movement that in like 2014 organized, or were a part of some of the largest prison strikes in history in the state of Georgia and Alabama, where prisons across the states were, you know, shut across Georgia, I think in particular, was really shut down. And so they're coming, and people from that are also associated with the Attica. Some of them were members of the Attica uprising that happened in 1971, mm-hmm. which is a historic date in prison struggle. Basically, what happened was, after George Jackson was assassinated by the state, George Jackson was mm-hmm. is a very famous prison advocate, former Black Panther. And anyways, when he was assassinated in 1971, Attica rose up in rebellion and was detesting the terrible, terrible conditions that were there. And so the prison strike is September 9th, and it's the 45th anniversary of the Attica uprising. And it's a call for prisoners across the country to end prison slavery. And it's looking at prisons as exactly that, slavery by another name. Yeah, so it's a call of rebellion against against the institution. And so, you know, some prisoners will do hunger strikes. It's a call for a work strike. But so what it looks like is basically at prisoners that choose whatever kind of form of resistance they want, you know. Mm-hmm. And so many of them will likely choose to go on work strikes. And basically what that looks like is them just not leaving their cells and going and maintaining the facilities that actively incarcerate them, mm-hmm. you know, or actively oppressing them. So not going out and doing that, not not going out and working for, you know, some of these various prison profiteer corporations that are making hundreds of millions of dollars a year off of prison labor. So it will actually be, you know, very historical thing to have a national prison strike like that. The last time that we saw something on that scale was with California.
Oh, sorry, it looks like we have a call. Do you mind if you take a call?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello.
Hello. Hi. So I'm listening to your show, and I've been a long-time liberal and cable listener. Like, I'm agreeing with everything you said, okay? Okay, so I'm the kind of guy that if I hadn't got mixed up with dope, I never would have ended up in state prison, Oregon State, Snake River. Okay. When I went there, it was my first real encounter with real evil, and I was astonished at the magnitude, the number of people, how many evil people, you know, career criminal, like sociopathic, antisocial. And so even though I agreeing in general with everything you're saying, without prisons, we'd all be very much more unsafe. There's real evil out there, and prisons are very necessary. I speak from someone that was on the inside.
Okay, well, it's
Though I agree with your policies and everything, just I think this liberal sort of thing that this liberal sort of doctrinaire is verging on liberal fantasy, because that's not what I encountered on the inside. Even though I went in thinking like we do, and came out thinking like we do, man, there's so much evil. It is just scary, frightening.
So
prisons are needed. I don't recommend sending them to private prisons, but my God, are they necessary?
Yeah. Can we start? Let's start from kind of a broad perspective. You went in for dope, right? How long did you go in for?
19 months.
19 months. Okay. So your story is actually really typical of why people get incarcerated in federal and state prisons. Like, 60-70% of the people.
I was a second timer, and you know, the burglary, heroin, and I needed to be there.
Okay.
I probably would have been better off at 13 months, but that was the law, the way it was written. You know, measure 11, so or not 11, but something like it. So I was just so frightened and shocked and scared by the number of evil people. I mean, truly malevolent, dangerous, violent, scary, predators, super predators, whatever you want to call them. Prisons are so necessary, but we've got to figure out a way of doing it. Wasted.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, but I'm really glad you called. I just want to give you 1 minute to make a pitch for what would you see as an alternative.
Oh, my goodness. Well, first off, when I was in there, they dropped the whole drug rehab education program. And then there was no...
So there was no drug rehab education.
One of the voc ed trainings, like electrical, or it was impossible to get into it.
You couldn't get into vocational ed.
The waiting list was years long. And so you basically just spin your wheels working in the cafeteria, and it's ridiculous. It just breeds contempt after a while. And there's the lack of rehab, you know, and the lack of, you know, any sort of correctional on the inside. It's just punishment. And a lot of people can't snap out of it when they get out, you know.
Right.
I just, thank goodness, but.
Would you like to comment, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, like, what is it that you know, is about our society that creates so many people like that, like you're saying, you know? I mean, no one's arguing that, everything's fine and everyone's just going to get along without prisons, you know? But we got to look at the bigger picture here that, you know, we have 25% of the world's prisoners and 5% of the world's population.
No, it's completely unbalanced. I totally agree with everything.
Well, let me just finish my point. My point is this.
We've got about 1 minute left.
I think that when we look at the situation is that prisons create an environment that create people like you're talking about.
You're
dealing with people that are, you know, coming in and out of the institution that have no place to go. You know,
that's part of the problem.
They're not giving them the resources they need, like you said, to come out.
Even with the resources, there's just a certain percentage of the population that are just career criminals and are dangerous, evil, and violent.
And
I don't know how else to put it except evil.
And we're gonna have to end it there. But thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you. And your points about that we need more vocational education and we need drug rehabilitation are really, really important points. So, yeah, go ahead. Would you like to make a final plug?
Yeah, so I just wanted to say, we have this national prisoner strike happening, and we definitely need more people in Portland to come out and help out with this campaign. So if you're interested, please look us up on Facebook, Portland ABC, or pdxabc.org. We have an event coming up on Thursday.